most. How about in? That is better than most. Better than most.
Oh, my goodness! Sorensen hit that one from the parking lot. And Vermont has a 59-55 lead.
Touchdown, Heisman! There are no flags on the field! It's a miracle! Tennessee has pulled a miracle!
The Mixed Picks Sports Show.
I feel like such a butthead. See, what I'm doing there is I'm indicating that I have a piece of paper in my hands, which is my signature thing to let you know it's a printed out email that I'm going to read. And I am going to read it eventually. But I feel like a jerk because we got an email in this morning that I wanted to start the show with, and now I have to paraphrase it because I lost it, because I do this. I get busy, and I'm doing all this prep work for the Mixed Pick Sportscast, and it basically, dude was writing in to say, thank you so much for having the Crossed Up guys on Friday, because we spent the first half of Friday's show with the Crossed Up podcasters from Philadelphia, and we talked all things sports basically from the Philadelphia angle, but we tied it into the West Coast, etc. And he finished his email by saying, I love the Mixed Pick Sports Show. That's the my favorite segment so far of the entire show, which brings me to Steve Mickelson, live in Las Vegas from MixPicks.com, 2Ks in Mix, 2Ks in Picks, MixPicks.com. Steve, you and I kind of texted back and forth. You had already been on with them a few weeks prior, and you know, I think it's Anthony you've known for years. And I mean, man, the my crew and a few people that I know had texted me and said, what amazing chemistry between the four of you guys, and none of you were in the same room. And so it really went off well.
Yes, I was glad that, you know, we had him on the show. I thought the show went fantastic. I really enjoyed it. I enjoy the show every day, but it was great to have them on as well.
So it's draft week, so a couple things to remind you of. Every day we are going to be spending some time on the NFL draft. It kind of depends on what else is going on in terms of the when, the where, and the how long. But remember that this Friday, the show is not on in its usual time. Friday morning, 10 a.m. Pacific, we will not be doing the Mixed Pick Sportscast, because instead, Friday, we're going from noon to 3, a three-hour post-day one of the NFL draft show, where we can analyze all of the actual picks, the surprises, the trades, etc., and the teams that are winners and losers, and what to look for on day two, which is Friday, and the final day on Saturday. So we're going to get to the NFL draft in a little bit. There's a lot going on that I want to talk about, and I may surprise some people with the first couple things that I chose, but let's start with, it's not really breaking news in the sports world, but to confirm, Scottie Scheffler won the RBC Heritage. He was already up. He had a 5-shot lead with 3 holes to play. They had a rain delay yesterday afternoon. They started up, and there was never a chance they were going to finish because of darkness. I had it on. So they had to finish this morning. So Scheffler's won 4 of his last 5 starts. The only reason I bring this up, Steve, is just something you and I have touched on before. Headline, will Scottie Scheffler win all 4 majors? He's the closest comparison to Tiger. Here we go again. Somebody in golf, Rory McIlroy, Jordan Spieth, Ricky Fowler, the list is endless, does something very impressive over a short period of time, and they have to be the next Tiger Woods. I am no hater of Scottie Scheffler. I am a hater of the sports media. The dude's won 2 majors, both of them Masters. Yes, this is incredible what he's doing right now. I think he's up to $18 million just this year in winnings. But do we need to anoint him the next Tiger?
I agree with you. No, we don't need to. The media is always trying to find that, but understand that Tiger Woods, to me, you know how you talk about a generational player? He might even be more than that. It isn't just playing great golf. You have to have the charisma. You got to have the personality that people like. There's so much more to Tiger Woods than just his golf game. Yes, the golf game brought that all out, but I'm just not convinced that Scheffler, even if he wins all 4 Masters, is ever going to hit that same level, because we've never seen anything. I mean, Arnold Palmer was probably up there during his time. Maybe Jack Nicklaus, but I always thought Arnold Palmer was a bigger persona than Jack Nicklaus, even though I felt Jack Nicklaus was a better golfer. And that's that part. You're looking for that unicorn. And I'm not convinced that Scheffler is.
And it's just too small a sample size. That's what drives me nuts about it. But okay, let me get that out of the way, and let me get to the email I was actually crinkling, because you can write to us anytime, live or after the fact. If it's worthy, we'll read them, rad@radradio.com. You can call 888-989-9811. So we talked last week about the Oakland A's, who on Tuesday night broke their own season low record. They had on a previous Saturday night, they had only 3,330 people in attendance. And then they broke their own record last Tuesday night, 3,296. The next day was a Wednesday afternoon game. That was against the Cardinals, same team as Tuesday night. And they got just under 10,000. They're on the road now. They won't be back till the end of the month. But Robert wrote in. He actually lives down in the Bay Area. And he says, hey, Rob, I'm not so sure. But the A's, because I was positing on the air, how did they go from 3,200 people Tuesday night to 9,500 people on Wednesday afternoon? Is it this work from home, remote work, you know, play hooky kind of thing? It's still baseball. But Robert says, I'm not sure, so sure, but the A's did bring back Dollar Wednesdays. You pay $2 for a ticket, you get dollar hot dogs. That could be the reason. It'll be once a month. I did confirm that was going on, so maybe that's the reason. I said that I've got an ongoing non-bet with Gary, who sometimes sits in on the Mixed Pick Sports Show, because he agrees with me that the A's they'll draw fewer than 2,000 by the All-Star break for sure. But Steve, you said at one point, did you say under 1,000 by the end of the year?
I just have a hard time seeing how they draw anything in September when football's going and kids are back in school and they're playing the Chicago White Sox at home or something. You know, two teams that are easily going to lose 100 games in the season. How you even get anybody in that ballpark?
I meant to check that. Damn it. I'll check that if we have time during the break. I meant to check if they were hosting the White Sox at what point this year, because that is the one, unless they're playing what? Because they already played Miami. They already hosted Miami, didn't they? We got to look at the – because you're right. There's going to be, before the end of the year, that point where the A's, we know, are going to be one of the worst teams in baseball, despite their surprisingly, I guess, good start based on expectations. They're not in last. And then when they play again, one of the more boring, less drawy teams, that's where they could literally draw below 1,000. All right. One more email on baseball from Kyle, who wrote in because we talked last week about Trevor Bauer, former Cy Young winner. He was suspended for 194 games for violating Major League Baseball's domestic violence, sexual assault, and child abuse policy. Never even arrested in the matter. Last week, his accuser was charged with a variety of, I think, federal felonies. We reported it all to you officially. I'm doing some of this through memory. And Kyle wrote in and said, why wouldn't anyone want this guy? The Giants should have signed him instead of Blake Snell. He's been pitching really well in a bunch of different leagues, pitched well in a simulation game against the Dodgers. He's pumping at 96 miles an hour plus, which is way harder than he normally would throw. Give the man his contract. And just to add to that, Trevor Bauer had 14 strikeouts yesterday, matching a Mexican League record with 9 strikeouts in a row. He's playing in the Mexican League. He signed a five-game contract with the Diablos Rojos team. He's 33, trying to make his return to the major leagues by showing everybody, hey, I can do this. As we discussed, Steve, it's a potential PR nightmare for the team that picks him up, because we live in this society where you're guilty until proven innocent. This guy has in every way been exonerated, I mean, to the nth degree, now that his accuser has been charged, and yet it would still be a PR challenge. He goes out and keeps doing things like this. Yeah, I get it. It's the Mexican League. But still, somebody's got to get – it's kind of like in the NFL when your quarterback goes down and you got to get a backup or whatever. Doesn't somebody got to take a flyer on this kid?
Houston Astros. If you're the Astros right now and your season appears to be on the brink of disaster because of all the injuries to your pitching staff, maybe – they take a stab and go after him. You know, you sign him for the remainder of the year. You put him on a, you know, prove it. I don't think it's going to be a lot of money. I don't think he's going to be commanding that 30, 40 million a year like he did when he went to the Dodgers. He might want, look, I'll come pitch for you for $3 million for the rest of the year. Let me just show it, build it up, see where it goes. If it doesn't work out, it's too much of a PR nightmare. The Astros let him walk away. And to me, it's worth a shot. If you think you can win, I don't see why you don't take a flyer on it and just take a chance.
Yeah, and on his end, I mean, even the $3 million, I mean, it's like, just let me back in. Give me a shot. And you can even make the contract incentive laden. And whether it's the Astros, who are already, everybody's like a little shaky, or somebody else a month or two down the road, I got to believe that if he keeps doing things like this, he's got four more games under this current contract, that somebody will. Now, the emailer mentioned Blake Snell, so this will be the third time you and I have had this conversation. We've kind of been falling back on, well, he didn't really have a spring training because he was signed so late by the San Francisco Giants, $62 million over 2 years, made his third start on Friday, gave up five runs. Giants kept spinning from there. They lost 17-1. Snell was knocked out in the fifth. He's 0-3 in three starts. ERA of 11.5. I'm an old school guy. I look at wins, losses, ERA. All his stats are horrible. Are we still able to fall back on the Blake Snell's getting his footing excuse? It's too premature to say worst signing of all time, but are we at the point where we can say maybe the Giants overshot their coverage on this?
I'm not ready to throw in the towel yet. Okay. This was his third start.
Yep.
Was it? The bright spot I take out of it is he's always walked a lot of batters. He only walked 1 4⅔ in this game. He didn't get pounded, giving up 9 hits. But I'm not ready to throw in the towel quite yet. I got to give it a little time. He missed all of spring training. And I want to go back to Trevor Bauer just for a second here.
Sure.
If you're Trevor Bauer, and I think of one player that I'm aware of in my lifetime that ever did it, do you not pull an Andre Dawson here, sign a blank contract, hand it to the team you want to go to or whoever, and just say, here, fill in the amount? Because that's what Dawson did with the Cubs. He was tired of playing in that turf in Montreal. He went to the Cubs, signed a blank contract, say, here it is, you fill in what you think I deserve, and I just want to play for you. I think that'd be a pretty cool move on Trevor's behalf if he did that and just, here you go.
Absolutely. Now, and we'll stay with pitching because I've been teasing the story and I want to get it out of the way because it's being talked about and it continues to be talked about left and right. The issue of injuries as it relates to pitchers. Back on April 9th, Houston Astros left-hander Framber Valdez was placed on the 15-day injured list. I saw this morning he's getting ready to throw again or start again, I think, this week. So that one, okay, he was only out for a couple weeks. But Atlanta Braves ace Spencer Strider will miss the rest of the season. He's done the Tommy John thing, I believe it is. Dr. Keith Meister is busy these days down in Texas. He performed the procedure on Friday. He also did the same or is about to do the same on Cleveland's Shane Bieber. The Yankees, Jonathan Loaiza, Miami's Yuri Perez, Oakland's Trevor Gott are all among the pitchers diagnosed with elbow injuries and Tommy John surgery. Marlins manager Skip Schumacher says, quote, we have to figure this out as an industry, as an organization. Okay, fast forwarding to the Major League Baseball Players Association has said that the rise in pitcher injuries is directly related to the pitch clock and more specifically to the reduction of 2 seconds from the clock with runners on base. Justin Verlander says no. The game has changed a lot. This is a quote, says Justin Verlander. It's easiest to blame the pitch clock, but in reality, you have to put everything together. Everything has a little bit of influence. The biggest thing is the style of pitching has changed so much. Everybody's throwing as hard as they can and spinning the ball as hard as they possibly can. It's hard to deny those results. And then, okay, before I open the floor to you, Steve, because this story really bugs me. There is also, if you just go to ESPN's Major League Baseball homepage, there are endless headlines about injuries to Major League Baseball players that aren't pitchers. Astros, Javier to go on IL with neck discomfort, frustrated. Angels third baseman Rendon lands on 10-day IL. Red Sox place their first baseman on IL with strained rib. Brewers, Hall sprains knee chasing bunt. He's on IL. Mets catcher Alvarez needs surgery on left thumb. None of that has to do with the pitch clock. So, okay, first of all, these are my problems with this, and maybe you can enlighten me as you rant. I don't understand the correlation between the pitch clock and arm injuries. Now, part of that is my bias of the old school thinking of I don't get this thing you and I have talked about. I'm an old man. What do I know? Of not letting guys pitch and throw, and oh, my God, they threw 100 pitches, and oh, he's going to need an extra day of rest. I think that's what's weakening their arms. Justin Verlander makes a great point. Somewhere in here, I think he goes on to talk about how kids in Little League are being taught to throw it as hard as you can and spin the ball. To me, that seems like a bigger issue, and or do we just have a training issue with the fact that plenty of non-pitchers are getting hurt, or is this just sports? All right, I'll shut up. Go ahead, Steve.
This is one of the subjects that I've been waiting for us to talk about because I have some very strong opinions on this. I read the article when it first came out, and I believe it was Tony Clark with the Players Association that blamed the pitch clock. And that is total garbage in every way. You roll back into the 60s and 70s, and they played their games in 2 hours, 2 hours and 15 minutes. These pitchers logged 300-plus innings year after year after year. Never an issue. Pitch count wasn't a factor. So how can playing a 2 hour or a 2 hour 15 minute game now cause the injuries when it didn't back then? Baseball as a whole has changed. It's an industry wide part. Verlander touched on a big part of it. In today's game, it is throw as hard as you can, spin the ball as much as you can, and this goes down to Little League and beyond. That was not the case the way it used to be. Professional baseball has gone to a slicker baseball because they want more home runs and they don't want pitchers to be able to do this, thus causing pitchers to grip the ball tighter, which also helps irritate that arm. Throwing maximum capacity at all times for 95 pitches is not a natural motion on your arm. Hitters now are geared to hit home runs and not worry about strikeouts, which mean the pitchers now used to be, I'm going to throw 85, 90 pitches. I'm going to get ground balls, you know, let my defense back me up. But the emphasis in baseball throughout baseball now is on the strikeout. And that's the most important thing, is to make the batter miss. We have travel teams now, so these kids are playing so many games at a young age. Where Rob, you and I, we would play during our spring and summer, and then that would be it. And then we'd have, you know, 8 months out. Yeah, you'd go play wiffle ball. You'd go play catch. You'd do these things, but you're not going to practice 2-3 times a week, playing all these games on the weekend. So you have to look at, it's the whole thing and where baseball now views it. One of the things I'm starting to hear some athletes, professional athletes, come out and say, and I love this, and I think Chipper Jones was one of them. Look, I want my kids to play all four sports. I want them to have their downtime, play football, play basketball, play baseball, give them the break, find out what it is. But even our high school coaches now, if you're going to be serious about baseball, that's the only sport you can play, and you can't play football anymore. You can't play basketball anymore. If kids are gifted to play at that pro level, that talent's going to come out. You don't need to. So when you roll all of this up into one, it's your problem is how we view it as a whole. Kids shouldn't be playing. Like my nephew several years ago, I want to say he played 160 games in a year.
What?
And he was still in high school. He's playing in Major League Baseball schedule between his travel ball, his high school ball, etc. He got more at bats in that one season than I probably got in my entire career playing through high school. But these are it. You're burning kids out. They're losing the love of the game. We're watching pitchers now game after game. This guy's in the fifth inning and he's already thrown 85 to 90 pitches. Greg Maddux's goal was to throw a complete game shutout, 90 pitches or less. And I think part of it was in 2 hours and 15 minutes or less. But you can't do that if your goal is to strike out every single batter. And that's become the emphasis. So baseball needs to loosen up the baseball a little bit. I know they like the offense, but take the slickness off so the pitchers don't have to grip the ball as hard. And to me, and I'm not a doctor, but what I've always been told is for a pitcher to build his arm strength, he needs to throw, and he needs to throw from some distances and throw every day. This, oh, I don't have a pitching routine. I throw on the days I start down to high school travel ball. I don't throw in between. Doesn't build that arm strength that you're used to having back in the olden days with the Gaylord Perrys, et cetera, that threw Ferguson Jenkins, who pitched 300 plus innings, all at everything is maximum speed. So to me, the whole industry's messed up. All of this rolled together is why we see it, but that's where the baseball industry has taken, you know, how they view the game and how it should be played, and I don't agree with it.
It's a a few follow-ups. First of all, it's a parallel with different motivations to how the NFL has destroyed defenses and how and you and I haven't even had a chance because we got time to talk about the new tackling rules in the NFL that just further limit the ability to actually play defense. Next one, you brought up slickness. Verlander did bring up slickness. He says that's the real problem, is you're trying to tell us to throw it as hard as we can to spin the ball, and the balls are too slick. You also brought up the kids and a CBS Sports article that was arguing what we're arguing, which is, I like the way you said it, the pitch clock argument is pure garbage. They brought up the fact that 13 and 14-year-old kids, if you just average it out, if you just mainline it, are being taught fastball velocity and ability to spin a breaking ball. That's just normal now. You brought up travel teams. Rankings start with 9 and under. 9-year-olds are being told the same thing. I was a pitcher from like 8 years old, right? Your second or third, I think that would be my third year playing Little League. And look, even at 8, I wanted to throw curveballs. I think every coach I had said, no, it's, and they told me it's bad for your arm. I don't want to see your elbow going like that. It wasn't until I might be off by a year or two, I was 12, where I was allowed to. And of course, yes, I'm doing it with my friends in the backyard. You know, you're a kid. You don't listen to all your adults and that. It's a lot different than literally implementing it into the game. And look, in high school, I never came close to 90 on the radar. I wasn't a big kid then. I'm not a big guy. I'm just under 5'11", 170 pounds. I ain't getting 90 miles. My whole game was the Greg Maddux game. You know, fooling with junk. I threw all 6 pitches that I could throw. But I was never allowed when I was in single digits to even think about all of that. And like you said, it's the whole industry, and it's not just baseball. Every sport seems to be doing this with this idea that the intentions are right and it's having the wrong results and no one is hitting reverse.
That's the scary part is, as you said, no one is hitting reverse. We're just watching it get more and more prolific in these sports, and you just wonder where it's really going to go.
By the way, a quick follow-up email on the attendance issue. Nate wrote in, RAD at radradio.com, says the White Sox, so we're talking about how the A's 3,296, whatever was their attendance a couple Tuesday nights ago, lowest of the year. We're wondering how low it will go. And Nate wrote in and said, the White Sox only have 3 wins this year, as opposed to the A's who have 8, yet the White Sox are doubling the average attendance. Yes, and that's going to continue. And you could argue, you know, market size and city size, venue and loyalty and all that. It's not going to be good. All right, I promise during NFL Draft Week, a draft segment every day, and we will not ignore the NBA and NHL playoffs. We're going to get to it all.
Knicks Picks, the Knicks Picks Sports Show. Let's
go! You can email us as well, RAD at radradio.com. A couple of quick follow-ups talking baseball. Is the pitch clock the reason that pitchers are getting injured, and we're just going to ignore the fact that other players get injured as well, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera? We brought up Greg Maddux, one of the greatest, and Eric said the other thing about Greg Maddux is he learned to pitch with location, change of speed, and movement. In fact, when he first came up with the Cubs, he threw in the mid-90s. Then he changed and started throwing 90 miles an hour with a two-seamer that he would throw at on the deck circle, and the ball would come back to the outside corner. That's an exaggeration, but it's, I mean, yeah, he had this, it was the letter C, man. That thing went way out and then all the way back. The other thing, too, that I didn't mention in my follow-up to your rant after my rant, Steve, was, could the Major League Baseball Association, by blaming the pitch clock, be more brazenly and blatantly biting the hand that feeds it? The pitch clock did transform the game of baseball in terms of it is so much more palatable now to, in particular, the younger generation. It's not a cliche. They say, I don't want to sit there for 3.5 hours. They shave, wasn't it like 28 minutes off the average game? Shut up. And pick something else to pick on.
Yes, the pitch clock has, in my opinion, helped the game because it has sped the game up and there isn't so much, you know, dead time as you're watching the game going, there's nothing going on at all. One of the things that I'm going to bring up here, and no one talks about this, you'll hear it on very rare occasions. Back in the olden days, the the pitches were timed as they were crossing the plate by a speed gun. Now they take the speed out of a pitcher's hand, so it's as soon as he's throwing the ball, that's what the speed is gauged on. They say it's a 6 to 7 mile an hour difference between what you'll get. So a pitch today at 97 would be 90 to 91 if you rolled it back into the 70s. So, yes, pitchers are throwing harder and more pitchers, but just that velocity of, oh, no, I got to hit 97, 98, 99 all the time, you know, that adds to it too, because we all fall into it. I mean, did you not go to the fair and they had the thing, throw the ball, yeah, let's see how hard you can throw. And you're going, I have no warm-ups, I have no anything. I'm taking a baseball and trying to throw it as hard as I possibly can. That's basically what we're telling pitchers today. This is what you got to do, the little booth at the fair, and throw it as hard as you can every time because you want to hit the radar gun.
They had that at the Oakland Coliseum when I was in my tweens, like 12, 13. They set it up, and you could go, and of course, and yes, I mean, it's so idiotic. No warm-ups of any kind, and you throw the ball as hard as you can. And the other thing, too, speaking of the Oakland Coliseum, Steve had time during the break to look it up, and this is the one to circle on the date on the calendar. If the A's are going to draw less than 1,000, if the season goes the way it looks like it will, the A's are not going to be a challenger of any kind. They're probably going to be in the race for worst team in the MLB by the time this thing shakes out. And it is August 5th through 7th when they will host the White Sox, who we presume will continue to also be one of the teams. And the only thing worse for them is that it's a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday series. Now, even if the A's do their Dollar Wednesday special, and I think they still do a Monday night special, they can't avoid that Tuesday night game. That's the one, the 6th, is the one that I'm going to circle on the calendar where they could literally get fewer than 1,000 people to watch that game.
Yes, because if you're the dollar, I would go without question just because I want to see the opponent team play. And with dollar hot dogs and all that other stuff, and if they do a promotion on Monday, anyone who wants to go see the A's, no one's picking that Tuesday. It's just, look, I got to get a promotion. I got to get something. Unless it's beach towel night or jersey night or something on that Tuesday, no one's going.
Yeah, and it's a Tuesday night game. I don't know if you saw. I mean, if the Wednesday is a day game, because that's where they do the special that our emailer was talking about, that would boost Wednesday. But yeah, that's the one. So that's the one to look for.
And on top of it, I believe they're hosting the Dodgers right before. So if you have at home, so if you have that, let's go see the A's. Let's go see the Dodgers. Well, now I've gone to see a game.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm not really looking to double back.
And it's not like the White Sox. The White Sox aren't the Yankees or the Red Sox, which always draw because they're the Yankees and the Red Sox. You know, big teams like that are always going to draw, even relative to the A's. You're going to get, 10,000 fans-ish at least when the Yankees, the Red Sox, the Giants, teams like that show up at Oakland. All right, for draft week, as we move towards our Friday 3-hour show from noon to 3, every day we'll spend a little bit of time doing what everybody else is doing, guessing, speculating, talking about what's in the news. I want to establish something first, Steve. As of right now, question number one, and I'm going to take this one first. The question is, will the Bears keep the number one pick, and will they pick Caleb Williams? All signs that I see say yes and yes. I'm not saying that that's what should happen. I'm not saying I agree with it. I just, and look, a lot of teams are really good at cloak and dagger stuff, but I do think the Bears will keep the number one pick, especially after moving Fields. I mean, I don't think there's any question, and I do think they will pick Caleb Williams. Do you agree with that?
I agree, yes.
Okay, which brings me to what I think is the more important question that I think you've addressed, and I think the answer is no. But I could have misheard you. I haven't heard anyone speculate that the Bears wouldn't take Caleb Williams. But is he the best quarterback in the draft? This is a quarterback-rich draft. Is he the best one whose talents translate to the NFL, in your opinion?
I'm not sure. There are several red flags. End of the college football season, I would have said, yes, he is. But since then, there's been so many red flags that have come out on him with teammates saying that, he sat out the bowl game that they played in, and the teammates made the comment of, hey, look, now we finally are going to play as a team. When you have teammates coming out against a quarterback, And they talk about Kingsbury's relationship, but everything I've read is his relationship. Caleb Williams's relationship was with Lincoln Riley and no one else. And if you're not even bonding with your offensive coordinator, you're not bonding with your teammates. To me, it still is a team sport. You need that quarterback to be a leader. And there's just too many stories coming out like this. Now, maybe they're sabotaging him, like Dan Marino got a lot of big bad press before the draft and he ended up dropping, you know, way down in the first round when he should have gone a lot earlier. Maybe somebody's sabotaging him in a little bit and hoping that maybe he can slide to the Giants at sixth. I mean, who's to say? Sheesh. But I still believe the Bears will select him number one.
No, and yes, I believe that as well. When we started doing the show daily, and I because college football, I've been getting more into it over the years. Back a decade ago, it was like hockey and used to be for me. Hockey still is for me. Sorry, basketball used to be for me, and I'm growing and I'm learning to appreciate so many other things. College football, I used to not pay that much attention until we got into, you know, bowl season, things like that. But I have really, when I evaluate, listen, and watch, I've really fallen hard for Drake May under the idea of the guy whose game it looks like translates the best to the NFL in terms of who would be the most. And look, we've had plenty of them that people say that about, and they're flops and the opposite, and, you know, your Tom Brady's and your Brock Purdy's and all that. That's why the sports are fun, and doing sports talk is fun. Make fools of ourselves talking like this, and then on Friday we got to take it all back. But, you know, if we get into, like, okay, I mean, there's basically, I think, six names that are thrown around, which the fun that the sports writers are having when you try to come up with your top five is, who do you leave out? You got Caleb, you got Drake May, Jaden Daniels, Bo Nix, Penix, and J.J. McCarthy, right? I mean, I don't know if I'm leaving somebody out, but those are mainly the big six. But I kind of go with Drake May over Caleb. And I'm not sure about the others, but when you have, if you were, as you've always said, this is why you're not a general manager, you would do things the wrong way because you wouldn't do what you're supposed to do. Which one would you be looking? I know a lot of it's about how your team is composed and things like that, but who's on that list?
I like Drake May. I thought he was a perfect fit for the Patriots at three. He's the most pro-ready quarterback in the draft, running a pro-style offense. I like what he does. The guy who keeps climbing that chart for me is J.J. McCarthy.
Yeah.
I just continue to look, and I'm not convinced that I wouldn't take J.J. McCarthy number one for quarterbacks. I would really struggle to take him number one in the draft, but I'm not convinced McCarthy isn't the best of all of them.
And he's also getting hyped up by his old coach, Jim Harbaugh, and that gets press as well. But then when you do look at him, you go, oh, wow, there's some reason for the hype. So you've got the Bears are at one, the Commanders are at two, expected to take a quarterback. The Patriots are at three, and so your big story of the weekend, and it hasn't died down this morning, it's the Patriots and the Vikings. The Patriots are at number three. Like you said, they need a quarterback. They don't have anything. They have nothing. And there are at least six of them to choose from, but they are going out of their way to make public that they are open for business, although they've made it clear this morning that they are looking for a, quote, unprecedented deal to move out of the number three spot. A lot of people think that the Patriots are looking at Jaden Daniels if they stay at number three, presuming that Drake May would wind up with the Commanders, but who knows. So the Patriots are making these noises like they'd listen, but it has to be unprecedented. And the Vikings are the team that are being talked about as the one that most need to move up because their quarterback is Sam Darnold, and they're at number 11 right now. These six, I don't know that any of the six are going to be left at number 11. But what's your take on the Vikings, the Patriots, and right now what you're hearing and seeing? I mean, we're going to see something big happen between some teams that we won't be able to predict. But what about this rumor?
The most likely to me is the Arizona Cardinals sitting at four with the money they have invested in Kyler Murray. The Patriots, I think, are sitting there saying what they're saying with, look, you have to blow me away with this offer, but we're willing to listen just in case someone is willing to throw the whole bank at them. I mean, it's got to be more than like, we're going to trade all of our draft picks in this year's draft to you and next year's number one. It's got to be something incredible for the Patriots to even consider it. But I think they want to hear what is there to see what they could get. I don't think anybody's going to be disappointed getting Penix or, you know, McCarthy. And that's where the real interesting is 11, 12, 13, the Vikings, the Broncos, and the Raiders, because all three need a quarterback, but outside of the Vikings who have draft capital because they have two number ones, they could throw, I think it's pick 11, and then it's something like 23, and then next year's one, and maybe you throw in a two or a three somewhere. The Vikings are really the only team that has that draft capital. So if I'm the Vikings, I'm sitting there looking at four, unless at number three is a court. They want Drake May, say, and you're afraid the Patriots are going to take him. But if you're the Patriots, you're never going to make the deal because Drake May is the guy you want. And I still contend this with everything that has gone wrong in New England and Belichick and the blaming of the quarterback position. I still find it so hard to believe the Patriots do not select a quarterback with pick three.
So you mentioned the Cardinals, and a lot of people are saying exactly what you said. They're in the catbird seat. They've got that fourth pick. They're tied into Kyler Murray at quarterback. The concern for Arizona would be how far down they would trade because would they miss out on the ability to get Marvin Harrison Jr., a standout wide receiver. The Chargers have the number five pick, and they've made it clear we don't need a quarterback. I mean, hello, we've got Justin Herbert. That they're available maybe as well also in the mix.
And I think the Chargers are sitting there going, let somebody make a trade for that quarterback with the Cardinals, because then – in essence, the Chargers have the number one pick in the draft of all non-quarterback players, so they can go with the Marvin Harrison. They can go with the Neighbors. You know, they can go with Alt at offensive line. There's so many things they could do. And we know the Chargers are not taking that quarterback. And to me, the Cardinals, they need a wide receiver. To me, I think unless they get blown away, they're going to take Marvin Harrison, and then the Chargers are going to go, look, we can trade back a little bit, because the wide receivers, Neighbors and Harrison, are not going to get by the Giants at six and the Tennessee Titans at seven. I don't think the Cardinals can trade down to 8, 9, or 10 and expect to get either of those top wide receivers. There is a third one, the guy out of Washington, but he's going to be gone in the top 10 too.
You don't think the Giants would take a quarterback if they had a chance to get one of those top six?
I think at this point they would roll the dice if they could get an exceptional wide receiver. Roll the dice. Take your chances that Daniel Jones might be the Daniel Jones we've seen once in his career, which was 2 years ago, and he can just not be the turnover Jones that we've all come to know.
NFL draft segment every day leading up to Thursday. We'll give you the best shot we got at predictions, which I'm sure we'll be making fools of ourselves on Friday. It's noon to 3 for the Mixed Pick Sports Show as we evaluate day one and get ready for day two. NHL and NBA playoffs next.
Mix Picks, the Mixed Pick Sports Show.
Let's go! We got this email, RAD at radradio.com, mentioning the NHL and NBA playoffs. It's so early. We've just started. These things go on for a couple months. We won't ignore them. You can't over-focus on them, especially on NFL draft week. But a great email here, RAD at radradio.com, from Alec, who made this observation, wrote in this morning, said, home ice advantage has been strong for the start of the NHL playoffs. No away team won. That doesn't bode well for Steve's Knights. Maybe they can break the streak in Dallas. They swept the Stars in the regular season, so there is some hope in that. According to stats, where they ended up in the playoffs is better than the LA Kings spot. The Knights have a much better chance against the Central Division. Well, fine. Let's just start there, Steve. We'll just bounce around a little bit. Vegas is at Dallas tonight, so they don't have home ice. It is game one. What are you looking for here?
Well, just during the break, read that Mark Stone will be playing for the Golden Knights. VGK hanging a lot of hopes on him, as I am too, that he could be at full strength and ready to play, because that's about the only chance the Golden Knights have here. I was so happy when they got to that sixth seed. I thought it set it up great for the playoffs, and then to go and lose at home to Anaheim in your last game. That crushed me. That crushed my hopes for the Knights and everything. But right now, the Stars are a slight favorite. They're a slight favorite in the series. You would think a one playing an eight, it'd be a lot bigger favorite. And to give you an idea, the Kings are playing the Oilers, and the Oilers are a $2 favorite, and that's 3-6 in the series. The Stars are only $1.35, which is just slightly over pick'em, and that's a 1-8 series, but that's the potential of the Golden Knights are there. Whether or not they can find a way to win on the road, because they have to. It's Stars have home ice. I just don't think they get it done. I'm hoping they can. The air came out of the Golden Knights for me.
So you covered both game ones that are tonight in the NHL, and your despair hangover has lasted longer than I thought it would with the Knights. I thought by today you'd be feeling a little bit better about their chances. I mean, do you see this at least going 6 or 7, or are you like, they're 5-1 and done?
I kind of think I'm hoping we can get it to 6, just not sure they can. It really took a lot on, because at that 6-3, they don't play the Stars till the Western Conference Finals. That set up great. By that time, the players are back. They're playing good hockey. They're back to being one of the top teams. If they were to advance to that spot, playing the Stars right out of the gate, you haven't built back that team chemistry, gotten Stone back in the flow of this offense, and I just don't see it.
So, Steve, your gravitas, your resume for doing the sports show with me is a lifetime of running sports books, etc. And every now and then I have to come to you with a question about sports betting that I don't understand. The Carolina Hurricanes opened the Stanley Cup playoffs as the favorites to lift the cup, but also hold the longest odds for any favorite entering the playoffs in the past 40 seasons. What does that mean? So they're the favorites, but basically anybody could win it?
For hockey, pretty much every year, anyone can win it. The Hurricanes playing really well the second half. They've came on strong. I've had high expectations for this team the last several years, only to be let down in the playoffs with them finding ways to win. You know, if you're an Oilers fan or a Maple Leafs fan, you can fully understand that, because every year they have high expectations and they get let down too. You know, the Hurricanes, real solid team. They play, you know, they could score, they play good defense, get good goaltending. I mean, they are a solid team. They just seem to not be able to get it done in these big moments.
So the story that I saw that included that about the Hurricanes says that and I don't know if this is what you're hearing, what you're seeing, says that the Avalanche of Colorado, the Boston Bruins, Edmonton Oilers have accumulated significant bets and money, but the most popular team, and then they say the biggest hazard to sports books, is the President's Trophy winning New York Rangers. Why is that? Or is that incorrect?
Well, each book, you know, books things differently. We all start off with pretty much the same odds, and then it's just through the course of the season, you know, teams get hot and people take bets. Some books are quicker at adjusting. I can tell you the Rangers for us isn't that big a deal. The Toronto Maple Leafs are the team that I'm sweating out here. I don't need the Maple Leafs going deep into this playoffs. So I'm hoping the Bruins can, you know, sweep them in the series and move them on, and I can enjoy the rest of it. You know, but each book, if you're an independent book, you and this is something people have to understand, the independent books are pretty much going by the wayside. It's becoming much more data feed and all that other stuff, which is the algorithms from the sports, you know, computers feeding in all the stats. Individual books is like what I have always read. Also goes with the person who's in charge of the numbers, their opinions, and how they may shade lines certain ways based on what they see and what they think it's going to be. Data feeds are entirely computer driven. There's no human element really in it. It's just what the computer says the line should be.
We'll jump to the NBA. Both Carolina and Boston are up 1-0. They play tonight at home, each of them respectively. As we jump to the NBA, yesterday, Giannis was out. If you watch the pregame show on TNT, those boys buried the Bucks before the game even started, gave Milwaukee no chance. They were doing what we were doing the last couple of weeks of, is this, you know, Doc Rivers was a failure as a hire, et cetera. And then Damian Lillard goes out and has a 35-point first half. And in the end, the Bucks go at 109-94 victory over the Pacers. That was kind of the standout headline from yesterday's action.
Yeah, and that was seemed to be the standout from all of these games. Team came out hot, buried them. I mean, the Bucks were up 69-42. This game was over immediately. They did exactly what they had to do, take it away. The Clippers, Mavs, you know, I've been high on the Mavs. You can't win a game if you score 8 points in the second quarter. I mean, that's what they did there. No chance there. Celtics, yet they do it again. Huge lead right out of the gate, put the Heat away, but then they just can't close. And the Celtics team always makes me nervous in the fourth quarter because they have these 20, 30-point leads and always seem to let the opponent creep back into it. They did it here, but they were able to turn it back up and luckily had gotten a big enough lead to hold off the Heat. But, you know, you looked at these games over the weekend, and the Lakers came out great on Saturday in the first half.
That's the other one.
Davis, LeBron playing great basketball. Third quarter, this is where your bench comes into play. The Nuggets, I think the Lakers bench had 11 points throughout the game. Nuggets changed that momentum in the third quarter, took over the game, and really from that point on, this was never really a game for the Nuggets, which is why, to me, they are the best, if not the top two teams in the NBA.
That was the other big one that I saw. Of course, the Lakers are always going to be talked about, but when you drop a lead and when you're outscored, specifically in that third quarter, the Nuggets outscored the Lakers 32-18, and social media lit up with pissed off Laker fans. They play again tonight. They are in Denver with Denver up 1-0. What about also tonight, Steve? The 76ers are at the Knicks. You were looking really high on the 76ers. The Knicks are up 1-0. Can the Sixers steal one here tonight and make you feel better?
Yeah, I'm not feeling better at all. We saw Embiid. You know, he hurt his knee again off of the jam. In the early game, he wasn't the same player from that point on. Maxie now has like flu-like symptoms. He missed the shoot-around yesterday. I have to believe he's going to play, but then you're wondering the health on him. You need Maxie and Embiid at 100% to have a chance here. The air is coming out of the Sixers for me too. I'd love to see him rebound, steal this game here. They're 5.5, 6-point underdogs right now. But Maxie and Embiid are such big parts of the team, and if they're not 100%, I just can't see them going far.
All right, who would you have more faith in if you have to pick one, and that's the game? Do you have more faith in the Sixers going deep in the NBA playoffs or the Knights going deep in the NHL playoffs?
Oh, gosh. I right now, I don't have a whole lot of faith in either one. I would probably say I'd lean more towards the Sixers to go deeper, which shows how far my confidence in the Knights has really fallen.
I would have chosen the Knights. All right, we'll get back to this in 23 hours, Steve. Have a great day, man.
All abandoned is out on the field. He's going to go into the end zone. He's going to go into the end zone. The Knights have won.
He gets it out. He's going to have a big field.
Picks Sports Show.